This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
Another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 108.
We've got interesting facts about 108. Did you know, this is actually super cool, the distance between the sun and the earth is 108 times the sun's diameter.
More or less.
Also, the distance between the moon and the earth is 108 times the moon's diameter.
More or less.
This makes it so the moon appears the same size as the sun during eclipses. And that is cool.
That's super cool. My fun fact about 108 is not nearly as cool. A Major League Baseball has exactly 108 stitches.
I think that's pretty cool.
I knew you would.
So this is the Family Gamers Podcast. It is episode 108, and we are super excited to bring this to you. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and amazing and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We do have a good show for you. We are going to be talking about cooperative games. So, Anitra, you went out onto the social medias and you asked people what they wanted to hear about.
I did. I asked people what kinds of things they would like to hear on the podcast. A couple of suggestions were things that we've already talked about, and I was able to point people to previous episodes. But we got a lot of good suggestions, so we're going to be starting to do some of those. I got a lot of suggestions for top five lists, and one of them was co-ops. Of course, we can never effectively limit ourselves to whatever the given number is, we always go over. So this show is our top six cooperative games to play with kids.
And in reality, we'll probably talk about more than six
games.
There'll
be a few more mentioned.
We're going to talk a lot about cooperative games that we can play with kids on today's show. But as always, before we do that, let's talk about what we've been playing.
What have we been playing, Andrew?
Well, I'll start with today. You were not home today, but I had a friend over, and we pulled out two games.
Mm-hmm.
The first game that we played was Dicey Peaks.
Nice.
From Calliope Games. This is a game by Scott Alms. We picked this up at PAX Unplugged last year. We will have a review for this coming in the next
few weeks. Yeah. Yep.
That is a fun game.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then next we played a game that I reviewed a long time ago from Mayfair Games called Fight for Olympus.
I remember that review. That's a great two-player game.
It really is. It is a card game that scratches a lot of the Magic the Gathering itches for me. It's nowhere near as complicated as Magic is. I mean, I don't think that Magic is particularly complicated, but just in general, it's a much simpler game where you are vying to be the next god on Mount Olympus. It's a beautiful game. It's got fantastic artwork,
mm-hmm.
Very tight mechanics, and I have a lot of fun playing it. And there were two of us, and so we said, hey, let's play this game.
Yeah, it's that wonderful genre of game where it is beautifully suited for two people. It's well balanced. Nobody, you know, leaps out ahead usually without mm-hmm. being able to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually played two games. The first one, Corey, who I was playing with, just kind of got unlucky on some of his pulls with cards, and so it ended pretty quickly. But the second game, I ended up winning, but I was convinced for a while that I was going to lose.
Sure.
It's really interesting how that game, if played right, can really bounce back and forth.
Swing back and forth, and yeah.
It's really fun. I really, really do enjoy that game, and I'm glad it's in our collection.
So it's funny. I was looking back on our last 2 weeks, and you got in a couple of concentrated gaming sessions, and I just had a game here and there and here and there, mostly with the children. We pulled out the Catamino set that I bought a little while ago, and Claire was super excited because she remembered Catamino from PAX Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game slash puzzle from Gigamic. And we went through and did a whole series of the puzzles. And then we did the competitive two-player game, which there's not a whole lot there for the competitive game, but it's a similar style to say Castle or Go or something like that, where you're laying pieces out on the board, and really just the object is to be the last person to lay a piece. Okay. And deny the other person the chance to fit, you know, one of the last pieces in. So that was fun. I still love the print and play game Tempus Imperium. I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast at least once or twice before. I keep posting my scores on social media, so I'm going to try not to ramble on about it too much. But I like Roll and Write games. I haven't played too many of them, but the ones that I've played, I've pretty much all liked. And Tempus Imperium has all the feel of a Roll and Write, but with no dice. Really ingeniously set up by its creator, Chris Anderson. The entire game board and gameplay is based on the date and time that you start playing each game. You write down the date and time as your very first action. And then all of the numbers affect how everything else gets set up. If you want to find out more about that, just check our show notes. I'll be linking to it there. Or you can go search Blue Cube Board Games Tempus Imperium. What else have we got? In my little here and there, each of our older children has asked me individually to play My First Stone Age with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I'm finally getting chances to play this game. It's cute and simple and fun, and it's generally pretty clear early on who's going to win, but it's fine.
I think they do a good job with that game, just kind of distilling down really the feel of Stone Age and less the actual game.
Yeah, it's not the actual mechanics of Stone Age, but you got the feeling of you're collecting the resources and building the huts.
Right.
And I love that it has a little bit of a memory mechanic, but you can still do well without leaning heavily on the memory mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I remember another game that I played today.
Okay.
So we got a chance to pick up a copy of Andy Jeremiah's new game, Sports Dice Football.
Ah.
And we've talked about Sports Dice Baseball a lot in the past. Sports Dice Football came out, there was an advanced run that came out at Gen Con, and it's just now hitting distribution now, so it is mm-hmm. available online. I like Sports Dice Football more than I like Sports Dice Baseball.
That's saying something, because you really like Sports Dice Baseball.
Well, I'm a baseball guy. Like, yeah. I like the sport of baseball. But Sports Dice Football is definitely a lot more intense. It moves a lot faster.
Mm.
There's a lot more on every single roll that happens, right? Because with Sports Dice Baseball, there's strikes and walks.
Right,
and
well,
like
Sports
that.
Dice Baseball feels kind of more like a pitching duel.
I mean,
sort of.
In this, sure. You have to go through essentially every single pitch of every at
three bat. Innings, yeah.
And Sports Dice Football sort of distills that down a lot better.
Sure.
So basically, if you're the offense, you have four downs to get to the 50-yard line, and then you have four downs to get to the end zone.
Sure.
There mm-hmm. are certain things where, you know, if you roll just touchdowns, you can go, you know, get a touchdown immediately. And there's some other stuff like that. There's pick sixes for the defense, things like that. And then it's the first player to get to 21 points wins. So it's very simplified,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't hold quite as close to the rules of football, but there is a note at the end that says if there's anything that's not addressed by the specific rules in this game, just use the normal rules of football.
That seems fair.
But it moves very fast. We played two games in 10 minutes.
Wow.
So
yeah. Not like real football at all, then.
Well, I mean, but...
Sorry.
No.
Gotta poke a little fun.
It's really good. It is... I mean, it's part of the kind of sports dice series that's being published by Fox Mind's imprint Funwiz. it feels, I mean, it's the same basic mechanic of rolling dice and presenting the whatever you have the most of and the power chip for tiebreakers and things like this. But it definitely moves a lot faster. It's a lot more edge of your seat than Sports Dice Baseball is. Really like it. It's a great game. The good stocking stuffer. We're starting to get to that season.
Since the last podcast, I've also played Megaland again. We have a review of that up on the website now.
Mm-hmm.
I end up with kind of mixed feelings about Megaland. I really enjoy it, but it's easy for the press your luck part with the treasure cards that you draw to put you in a really good position early on or a really bad position early on. Not every time, but when that happens, it takes some of the fun out. Mm. So,
sure.
Overall, I still think it's a great game. I did get to be involved in one game night over the last 2 weeks. I think that was one of the times we played Megaland. We also played HIDE, Hidden Identity Dice Espionage. We had played this game a couple of times before and just didn't like it. It's been long enough that I'm not sure what we were doing wrong, but this more recent time, we really enjoyed it. So I think we missed something in the rules the first time around.
That's very possible.
I mean, that sort of thing happens.
I don't think I was blown away by the game, even playing it through this time, but it certainly was a much more enjoyable experience, I will say.
It was an enjoyable game. Yeah. I had fun with it. And we got to start playing Bob Ross Happy Little Accidents from Big G Creative.
Yeah, this is a game that we got in for review from Gen Con.
Yes.
And I like this game more than... So, okay. This game is less Bob Rossy than The Art of Chill. Like, The Art of Chill is dripping with the Bob Ross theme.
Yeah. So, I think this game takes some of the inspiration from Bob Ross, but it feels more like a little bit more of a frantic party game rather than a long, slow, chill, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, the only thing that has any of the Bob Ross theme is just the concept of Happy Little Accidents and reusing them to make pictures. Like, that's it.
Sure.
Everything else is completely different. So, it's still a fun game. I actually like it better than The Art of Chill. But it doesn't have quite as much theme as The Art of Chill.
Yes, but it's very fun.
It is fun. It's super fun. And it's a great game to play with multiple age range. I mean, this is a fantastic game to play across any age range.
Yeah. We'll have a review out for it in a little bit. I'm not sure it's available to purchase just yet, but it will be soon.
It will be soon.
At Target.
And we will be, we'll be timing our review roughly with the release of the game. So if you see the review on our site, it's time to go to Target.
It's time to go pick it up when we put the review out. Because it's great.
Spoiler alert, it will be a positive review.
A little bit. All right. But you had another game night.
I did. So we have some friends who live on the other coast, and they were in town for a little bit, and they're baseball fans. So we pulled out some baseball games. We pulled out Fanzy and Sports Dice Baseball, which are both dice-based baseball games.
By Andy Jeremiah.
Right. Published by different companies, but
yes.
Created by the same guy. So Fanzy is, it's a lot like a lot of his other games, like Brew Dice, where you're trying to roll dice to match a certain collection criteria.
Yeah.
You can think something like Yahtzee, but the collection criteria is on a card that comes up. Right.
Yeah.
So it's always changing.
I think it's well named that the name kind of pulls together the idea of being a fan, a sports fan, and Frenzy, because that's how it feels. You have six dice to roll, and you're trying to match a certain number of icons on the card that's been pulled up.
Okay, so we should say, so there's an NFL version of this and an MLB version of this. We were playing the MLB version of
this.
Yes. So the icons are the logos for the sports teams, the actual sports teams.
Yes.
And essentially the cards that come up in the MLB one that we played are things like, AL West teams or NL Central teams. But then there's stuff like Grapefruit League teams. So the Grapefruit League is all of the teams that do spring training in Florida.
Right.
And Cactus League is all the teams that do spring training in Arizona. So some of the different kinds of collections that it sort of comes up with are really interesting. Sometimes it's things like, you know, the original six kind of thing for some of the original non-expansion teams, things like that.
Oldest ballparks.
Yep. Classic ballparks was in there. And then there was, you know, one of the symbols is the MLB symbol, which is wild.
That's a wild.
It's like rule six MLB symbols. So the cards that come up, if you have domain knowledge, it's easier for you.
Yeah, it's funny. This is a game where definitely anybody can play, but the more you're into the theme, the tighter the game will feel for you.
It's a really good bar game. Like, that's what this Fanzie is, a really good bar game, whether you have like your own like mini man cave in your basement that you hang out with your friends and you have some kind of like fake sports bar situation going on. Like, that's where this game shines.
Definitely. But we had fun. It was two men and two women. The two men both had quite a bit of baseball knowledge, and us two wives were kind of like, uh-huh. Like, I've got the division that our team is in. Like, that, I know the teams. So, for me, that was AL East. For her, it was NL Central. But even through that, like, I learned a little bit through doing the game. And all of the logos that you have to match are always on the card. So, it's not impossible to win the card.
Right.
You just got to be a little bit more on top of
what you need. And some of the collections are interesting, because sometimes it's like, get five logos with animals. So you have things like the Baltimore Orioles, the Toronto Blue Jays, the St. Louis Cardinals, all these, you know, these kinds of things. And so
the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Right. Yep, exactly. So some of the collection things are not the classic baseball.
Yeah, some of them were a little quirky.
Groups. Yep. So that was a lot of fun. That was a fun game.
Yeah.
We also played Sports Dice Baseball. I sort of referenced it in a deprecatory way, I suppose. By saying that I liked Sports Dice Football a little bit better, but I still like the baseball game. It's still good.
It's fun. It's a way to kind of sit down with a friend and, you know, have a friendly little game of baseball that takes 10 or 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of games by Andy Jeremiah, he came to visit and you guys got to play games with him, and I'm a little jealous. What games did you play? The only one that I saw you do was called Not So Fast.
Yes, Not So Fast was a silly game.
It looked like a silly game.
It is. It's done by Smirk and Dagger Games, and this is a game for, I think it plays up to six people or maybe up to five people. So the way the game works is there are these cute, chunky wooden tokens that represent different nuts. There's pistachios, walnuts, cashews, and almonds.
Okay.
There's one almond and one pistachio. And then however many walnuts and cashews are out, there are one less than the number of players for each. So if you're playing a four-player game, you have three walnuts, three cashews, one pistachio, one almond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So each player gets a stack of cards. It's just the stack is evenly distributed. On the bottom is like a terminus card that says, like, it's time to score. And what happens is, on a player's turn, they take the top card and they flip it face up in front of them. And they do that twice. So there's two cards in front of them. At any time, if in front of a given player there are four icons of a certain nut, everybody needs to reach in and grab that nut.
All right. And you want to do it early enough so that you actually get a nut token, right?
That's correct. So basically what happens is, since there's one less than the number of players, one person doesn't grab a nut.
Sure.
Right? And that player has to take all of the face-up cards in front of the player who is flipping cards over and put them underneath their stack, so they go underneath that terminus card, the time to score card. Now, you might have noticed I mentioned there's one pistachio and one almond. Whoever grabs the pistachio when there are four pistachios, they can choose who gets all the cards in front of them.
Oh,
or
neat.
Who gets all the cards in front of the person who was flipping cards.
Yeah.
And the almond appears when there are, I think, seven icons. So if you flip over the first card and there's three icons of something, and you flip over the second card and there are four icons of something, there are a total of seven, or it might be six and seven, I'm not sure. And then you would reach for the almond instead, and then you get to do the same thing. You get to choose who those things go to, those cards go to, just as a kind of a different way to mix it up. There's also these sort of, I don't know how you would describe them, like motion cards.
Pose
cards, yeah. And there's three of them. There's a pose one, pose two, pose three, and they're kind of off to the side. And some of the cards that you flip up will have numbers on them.
Okay.
And if you flip up a number, you have to do, everybody has to do that pose. And whoever's the last person to do that pose has to take the cards.
So gotcha. It's
just kind of another way to sort of mix it up and be a little bit silly. It was a really cute game. Andy, Andy's, I don't know, probably 15 years older than us. He played, I played, and then our 9-year-old and our 7-year-old played. So it was a lot of fun.
It sounds like it was a lot of fun.
It's a light game. It's a light multi-generational game.
Well, and it sounds like it probably mixed up some of the speed game aspect, which Claire is really good at.
Yep.
And added some other silliness and things in there.
Yes. So Claire was winning for a while. I dominated that game. But Claire was beating Asher for a while, and Asher was getting pretty frustrated. But then we'd started to get into the things where it was like 7, and so the almond was supposed to be grabbed, and Claire would have grabbed whatever it was that appeared a lot, which is the wrong thing to grab, because you only grab it when there's 4.
Got it.
And so she, in her haste to be a quick player, had some misses, and those caused her to take a bunch of cards, and Asher ended up beating her. Because she was trying to be a little bit too quick.
So you gotta be discriminating.
You do have to be careful with stuff like that. So it was kind of an interesting thing there. We did also play Dice Forge.
Love Dice Forge.
The kids and I introduced Andy to Dice Forge, which he found pretty entertaining. So
I can't quite pinpoint what it is I like so much about that game, but I really like that game.
I told you.
And you were right. let's see. I got a couple more. Again, children pulled out games and asked to play with me at random times. I think they're realizing it's so close to the end of summer vacation. They're trying to get in the game time while they still can before there's homework time.
Right.
So I played several games of blank over the last week or so. I think I have won every single one of them. And so I've gotten to make new cards every time.
Good on you.
I have now made it my mission to keep coming up with ways to make cards that either treat everyone equally or help the player who is furthest behind.
Okay.
To try to balance out the games a little bit and keep them from being too cutthroat.
Sure.
I'm really enjoying that aspect of blank, that you can make it play however you collectively want it to play.
Right. Well, I actually think it's pretty apropos to point out that Hub Games, formerly the Creativity Hub, has started to release, and I don't remember if when we talked to Rory O'Connor he teased this or
he mentioned,
I don't remember exactly how much detail there was.
Not much.
But they released Blankdemic.
The first expansion pack to Blank.
Which they worked with Matt Leacock and created some blank cards that had a pandemic-like flavor to them.
And his daughter co-designed this expansion with him, which I think is adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's cool because, just like you said, you can, I mean, the essence of this game is that it's organic, right?
Yes.
But you can sort of inform or influence, but you can influence your copy of the game with the particular expansions that you decide to integrate in with it. Almost like in a game like Smash Up, where you can sort of elect to play the game in a certain way with the factions that you choose.
Yes.
These expansions, I think, are a little bit different than sort of classic expansions in games, where, you know, maybe you have some thematic expansion to something. This is something where it really does change kind of the way the game plays in some ways. So I think it's a cool thing that the Hub Games crew is doing. And I think it'll be neat to see what other designers they end up working with and what other designers' children.
Yeah, I think it's great. One last one. I won't belabor the point, but I also, Asher, our 7-year-old, has several times in the last few days pulled out Monsters in the Elevator. I mean, we talk here about what we've been playing. Again, since it's near the end of summer vacation, our kids have been pulling out a lot of games and just playing games with each other. And those have ranged all over the map. But I've seen Monsters in the Elevator come out quite a few times, and I've played it a couple of times. I am still really impressed with this cooperative game. And spoiler alert, it makes our list of our top 6. I think that's it for now for what we've been playing. And it's time for a break.
All right, we'll be right back.
This snap review is the Card Caddy and Accessories by Narrows Hill.
So the Card Caddy system is a really interesting system. It's made of some kind of plastic.
Very durable plastic.
Very durable plastic. And at its core, the Card Caddy is really just a box to hold some cards in. The original Card Caddy was sized to hold basically a deck of playing cards comfortably.
A standard deck of cards with a little bit of extra room, but not very much. Mm-hmm. If you had more than 55 cards, it wasn't going to fit. We've had one of those for quite a while now, and we've actually gone out and gotten a few more, because mm-hmm. They're really handy. Not only is it a case, once you open it up, it goes back together in a different direction and becomes a way to hold your draw pile and have a discard tray to make it easier to play cards anywhere that they might start to blow around a little bit.
Right. The thing that makes it really neat is that the two halves fit into each other, so it always provides walls so that if you're not necessarily playing on a flat surface, you are able to have a draw and a discard, and you don't have to worry about balancing your cards on top of like a suitcase or something in an airport, which we've done before. Yeah. One of the reasons why the Card Caddy is so interesting is because not only do you have this hard, durable case that you can throw a deck of cards in and throw it in your bag, but also it's got that cool feature of the discard tray. And finally, every single Card Caddy has on it a little indentation with the ability to store a poker chip in it. And that's really handy because you never know when you might need a poker chip for like a small blind or a big blind, or for any kind of indicator when you're playing a game.
Yeah. We also have received a few of the Card Caddy accessories mm-hmm. To review, so we'll cover those real quickly. We have a single deck size box.
We have a double deck box as well, which is twice as tall, so it would hold twice as many cards.
Yep.
Or it would hold about 60 cards sleeved.
That's right, handy.
Because it makes them a little bit thicker, and the Card Caddy, it is big enough to hold sleeved cards. So
listen
something
to this,
like
Magic
this,
the Gathering players.
Yeah, this is perfect for Magic the Gathering players. What makes it even better is there is a Card Caddy cache, which basically clips onto the end of a Card Caddy. So if you've got a 60 to 70 card Magic deck sleeved, and you wanted to also carry some dice with you, you could grab one of these cache things. I think you could literally, and I'm not kidding when I say this, I bet you could run this thing over.
With a car,
maybe not the Card Caddy itself, but this cash thing. I mean, it is thick and heavy duty.
I think the Card Caddy itself, if it was full of cards, you could run over and you'd be more likely to, bump it out of the way than to destroy it.
So it's very, very durable. But that's not even the only thing that we have. We have another piece.
Yes, we have another piece, which it just says on here Card Caddy connector, but it's a scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
It has two little pegs that store on one side, and you can clip it onto the Card Caddy, actually with either side facing up, either the pegs or the pegboard. But you take the pegboard out, and you can keep track of scores from 0 to 70. And there's two colors of pegs here on ours, a white and a green.
Right. So, again, for those Magic the Gathering players, you could track your life with this. You mm-hmm. could track any kind of counters or anything like that. Any games that are card games that you need to track a numeric score for, you could do something like this for that as well. And it's called the Card Caddy Connector because you can actually put it between two card caddies and connect them to each other.
This one you could put between two card caddies.
Yeah. So Narrows Hill just completed their Kickstarter for the Triple Decker Card Caddy. So that's going to be available soon as well. And there's a few other accessories that Chris Nichols, the guy who has created this, has on the docket. We love these things. We've given a couple of them away on the show.
Yep.
We really recommend them. It's super convenient to take a deck of cards, take it out of the lame cardboard box that's going to fall apart.
Oh my goodness.
Throw those cards into a card caddy and then just chuck it in your bag. They're inexpensive. You can find them for under $5 for the single decks. They're fantastic. We like them a lot.
Yeah. I would highly recommend, for families who play card games with their kids, the regular single deck card caddy is perfect for a regular deck of cards. If you're a family that plays a lot of, say, Uno, then you're going to want a double decker. But an entire set of Uno cards will fit in a double deck box.
Right.
I don't think we're going to put a rating on this review, but we do think they're excellent.
Right. I mean, they're just so subjective. They could be used for so many different things that it's really difficult to say, this is, you know, X number of stars out of X number of stars. Yeah. But I cannot more highly recommend the Card Caddy. You can just Google Card Caddy and you'll find them and all the different kinds that are out there. We've had Chris Nichols on the show before. It's an excellent product, really all done by one guy. So definitely check out the Card Caddies if you travel at all with card games.
Even to your local restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that's the Card Caddy in a snap.
All right, and we're back from our break.
So, cooperative games. Sometimes you don't want to play against your children, or you want to encourage your children not to play against each other, be antagonistic to each other. Sometimes you just want to play all together and share the joy when you beat the game, or share the defeat when you lose.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, with kids especially, we've sort of joked about how I'm not a bad loser, but I'm a bad...
You're bad at losing.
I'm bad at losing. I think kids especially suffer from that a lot. And so...
Yeah.
Cooperative games are a good way to kind of avoid that while still getting through the whole process of, hey, we're playing a game together, we're having family time, doing those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and really, frankly, the biggest reason why I am a fan of cooperative games is because it allows us to help walk our kids through the process of developing strategy without playing the game as a shell player. Kind of thing.
Without playing the game for them.
Well, in a game where there is some sort of built-in antagonism, where there is a winner and a loser, helping your kids play the game is in some ways self-defeating, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But when it's a cooperative game, that's not really happening.
Right. You're saying we're working together, and so, you know, why don't we try it this way?
Right.
The best cooperative games, I think, leave room to both direct your kids on strategy, but also leave room for them to make their own meaningful decisions.
Right.
So without any further ado, our top 6 cooperative games to play with children, starting at the easiest one.
Sure.
Or maybe I should say the simplest one. Not always easy. A game we've mentioned before. Still love it. Still a terrible name. It is by Reiner Kinesia. 3 M's and an exclamation point.
Right. Pegasus Spiel should have known better. They should have known that they should have named this thing better. But they didn't.
So in you and your fellow players are mice trying to steal food from a pantry before the cat can get you. The idea is to cover up every square of this board that's laid out in a grid with little mouse tokens. You roll dice. You have an option to press your luck, you know, try to re-roll to get better items. And then you're covering up parts of each food. Each food item covers at least 2 and up to 5 squares within the grid. I love this game because it offers a great way to start getting your kids involved in just a little bit of strategy. Because you can say, oh, well, you rolled the cheese. You could put the cheese token over here. Or you could put it over here, and if you put it on this one, then you'll finish covering this long piece of cheese. And anytime we finish covering a food, then the cat doesn't move this turn. And that means we'll have more time to try to, you know, steal all the food before the cat gets to the pantry.
The important thing about it is that you can take the die and move it along and say, well, if we cover here, look at what happens. It's very visual.
Very, very visual.
And that makes it so you don't have to talk in abstract concepts when you're trying to explain it to a child.
Yeah. I have played this with children as young as a few months under 3.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly recommend it for that age, but it is doable.
Right.
It's certainly doable from about 3, 3.5 upwards. And it's got a double-sided board, so if you like the concept as an adult but just want more challenge, you can flip it over to the more difficult side.
Right. There are also a few variants that are in the rule book that make it even harder.
That also can make it more difficult.
Which will make it just flat out a challenging game, even though it's intended for a younger age range and up.
Well, and like many but not all cooperative games, it plays very well solo as well.
Right. So that's by Rainer Knizia, published by Pegasus Spiel.
So moving just a little bit more challenging, a little bit older in concept, is Purlock Holmes, Furiarty's Trail.
So this is another game with a title that has enough letters in enough places that it's kind of annoying.
That is Purlock with three R's.
Right. You will not find it if you use less than three R's.
Or you can go to thefamilygamers.com, and we have a review of it with a handy link to Amazon.
Right. So in Purlock Holmes, published by IDW, you are playing the role of, Purlock Holmes and his cadre of detective helpers attempting to capture Furiarty. And you do this by catching members of the various gangs in London performing nefarious tasks until you finally catch up with Furiarty himself. This is a deduction game, so every player will have in front of them a card facing out, which is a member of one of the gangs and the time at which a crime was committed. And as you draw cards from the deck and place them face up on your board, the other players are allowed to give you clues about whether or not you're close to figuring out who the given crime committer is in front of you. As you get closer and are able to use some logical deduction, you're able to potentially identify what gang the criminal is a member of, and what time range in which they committed their crimes. And so it's a really fun... First of all, the puns are adorable, and I love the artwork in this game. It pushes so many buttons for me that I probably have two positive... and I admit this. I probably have too positive an outlook on this game just because I just love the concept and the puns and the artwork so much.
I mean, to be fair, the artwork is very well done. They could have easily done this game with simple cartoony artwork and the same puns, and it still would have gone over well, but instead they went with this sort of film noir,
so
gritty
beautiful
detective art style with animals in clothing.
It's awesome. It's just awesome.
It's really great.
This is a game where you are literally working with the other people to deduce who the people are in front of you, and so you're able to teach other players logical reasoning as you work through this game. That it's a fundamental component of the game.
We absolutely love it for that. And as far as like age range on this, really, once a kid understands I was gonna say can tell time, but it's not even really can tell time, but once they understand the concept of the numbers around the clock and they can count from 1 to 12, then they can play this game, which means our 4-year-old is getting close. Probably in another couple of months, he could easily play it with us.
Yeah, I don't feel like this game hits its sweet spot until you get into that 7+ or 8+, though. I mean, I think a 5-year-old can manage their way through this game, but I don't think...
Yeah, I think...
I mean, I think there needs to be a lot of hand-holding and shepherding at that age.
Yeah, I think you're looking at, realistically, to really enjoy the game together, like first grade and up. I would say the same thing is true of our next choice, which is Monsters in the Elevator. Mm-hmm. This is another game that we've reviewed in the past. It is a cooperative math-based game. You're practicing both counting by tens and a little bit of factoring, because certain cards say, you know, the next multiple of 3 or the next multiple of 4. Nothing more difficult than that, though. So, again, it's in that first or second grade range to start working through it. In Monsters in the Elevator, you are trying to shepherd a group of monsters in and out of the elevator on their way to work in a building that has 20 floors. You're trying to do it without overloading the elevator so that all of the monsters who get in the elevator can successfully get out and go to work. It's a cute little concept. The monsters are adorably illustrated. They're all kind of warm and fuzzy. There's no scary monsters here. And it's really just as simple as you put some monsters in, you check to make sure the elevator hasn't passed its limit, which is different depending on the number of players. It's 50 pounds per person playing. So I played a two-player game. The limit's 100 pounds. At a three-player game, it's 150. You check and make sure that you are not past the limit. Okay, you're not. The elevator goes up a floor, and everybody draws new cards. And then you check to see which monsters can exit on that floor. It's either printed directly on the monster. A lot of the elevator floors have specific exit conditions as well. You know, monsters adding up to exactly a weight of 50 may exit. Or exactly 50 worth of monsters may exit. Or pick the largest monster and it may exit. So it's really fun to work through it together. And the more players you have, the easier it gets. Which is a nice change. At two players, it's fairly challenging. And if you want to make it extra challenging, you can shuffle the elevator floor deck so that 20 is still the last floor, but you never know which floor is coming next.
Okay, so the fourth game on our list is the game that I really love because it's one of those games that really affords helping the people that you're playing with sort of understand strategy and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Castle Panic. And this is a game that we've actually picked up a bunch of the expansions for as well, which add a whole extra layer of play and dynamics to the game with the Wizard's Tower expansion adds magic and all these other creatures and stuff like that.
Yeah. I will say that the base Castle Panic is probably appropriate from kindergarten up. Once you add expansions, it definitely increases the difficulty by a few grade levels worth, I would say.
Yeah, for the most part, it's not really a lot more complex. It's just definitely a lot more difficult.
It's more difficult.
So with standard Castle Panic, you can have one player kind of quarterback the whole thing pretty easily.
Yeah.
Once you start adding like the dark tower, the Wizard's Tower, whatever it's called, and then the Agamemnon expansion, all that stuff, you kind of need more than one brain to sort out the best way to play the game. But if you haven't somehow heard of Castle Panic is a game where there's a board with concentric circles on it. In the center of the board is your castle. You have a castle, and then you have an outer ring of walls. You have a tower in the middle, and then an outer ring of walls.
So what you're saying is it's a tower defense game?
Yeah, it is. It's a tower defense board game. And then, so you have a ring around the castle, which is the swordsman ring, and then a further out ring, which is the knight ring, and then another ring that's further out, which is the archer ring. And
then outside of that is the forest.
Is the forest, right. And the entire set of concentric rings is broken out into six equal
segments.
Slices, I guess.
Yeah.
Pizza. And so on everyone's turn, they're going to be drawing some monster tiles and rolling a die to determine which segment these monsters go in. And again, and also on everyone's turn, these monsters are creeping closer to the castle. Players have cards they can play, which will apply to usually one color.
Yeah, so you mentioned the six segments. It's three larger color segments, and each color segment is broken up into two numbers.
Right. So players have cards in their hand, and those cards usually will apply effects to one color and one of those sets of rings. So you could have like the green archer or the
blue
red
knight.
Swordsman.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was really good how we got all three sets of combinations in there. and so as these monsters are coming in, players can trade cards back and forth. So for example, if I have a red swordsman card in my hand, which I could use to attack a monster in the red swordsman ring, I could trade that. If there's a monster in the red knight ring, I can't hit that yet. But I could trade my red swordsman card with the person next to me for some
who
other
will go
card
next.
Of theirs who will go next, because we know that the monsters will have moved closer. And so that's how you can sort of meter out some of the strategy. And again, some of those more complex game mechanics or more difficult monsters kind of ramp that kind of stuff up. But fundamentally, that's how the game is played. And it helps teach logical progression.
Yeah, and the idea of like, okay, the monsters are moving in, You know, we know the monsters are going to keep moving in. So if I do this, then you're going to be able to do this on your turn.
Right.
And helping kids walk through the sequential nature of that and being able to start looking ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's one of the reasons why we really like Castle Panic on this list, because it is... I mean, it's really rewarding, too, because there's a lot of monsters that you have to carve
so
your way
many
through
monsters
by the end of the game. So if you manage to keep your tower standing, you win.
Yeah, and it's definitely, even when we've had a so-called easy game, Castle Panic is, the base game is relatively easy to beat. But even so, you've slogged through so many monsters on the way that when you end... Like, you want to stand up and cheer, like, yes, we did it! Right. We beat all the monsters!
You still feel victorious.
Yeah. Number 5 out of our top 6 is Forbidden Desert.
Mm-hmm.
So, in case you didn't know, Forbidden Desert is the sequel to Forbidden Island, which is another great co-op game. I picked Forbidden Desert for this list because I was looking for something that was still approachable by kids, but starting to get a little bit more challenging now. I think Forbidden Desert does that nicely. Forbidden Island is at a similar difficulty level to Castle Panic. As long right. as you've got one person in the group who can read, you all can kind of work through who goes where on what turn. In Forbidden Desert, you're still working, you're still searching through a grid map to find the pieces you need to... leave the desert. In this case,
build your airship.
Building the airship is such an awesome mechanic.
Yes.
But as you are searching the desert, the sand keeps shifting around and hiding things and burying things.
And moving tiles.
And moving tiles around. And so it makes it more difficult to keep track of the things that you want to get. And it's a little bit harder to plan more than one, you know, one or two turns ahead. So I really enjoy Forbidden Desert for that.
So, ironically, Forbidden Desert, another game designed by Matt Leacock, who we talked about earlier in the show.
Hey, Matt, you make awesome cooperative games.
Forbidden Desert is published by GameRight. It's available wherever you buy anything, pretty much.
You should be able to get it anywhere. Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert both come in these awesome tins.
Yep.
The sequel to both of them, Forbidden Sky, comes in a standard game box, but I can't wait to... get my grubby little hands on it and see it.
It should be here soon. We should be getting a review copy. It should be here soon. It comes in a standard game box, by the way, because there's magnets in the box.
Oh, cool. I will also say, already from the little I've seen of Forbidden Sky, it looks like it takes the same idea and ramps up the difficulty a little bit more again.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to trying that one out.
Get our hand on that.
Yeah.
Game. The last game on our list is... Flashpoint Fire Rescue. So we actually were going back and forth about whether or not we wanted to put Pandemic or Flashpoint Fire Rescue on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I chose Flashpoint, I think because Pandemic, I just think, first of all, a lot more people know about it. And second of all, I think that the sort of the theme of Fire Rescue, I think, resonates better with kids.
Like, I think you're right.
I don't
yeah.
think they have a kind of a grasp of what global pandemics are, but let's get people out of a burning building is something that's pretty easy to understand.
Sure.
So in Flashpoint Fire Rescue and its, you know, innumerable expansions,
yeah,
you are firefighters tasked with trying to save people from a burning building.
Mm-hmm.
And you do this by, you're moving throughout the, whatever the building is. If it's the base game, it's pretty much just a house.
It's a house.
And you have a certain number of movements, and just like with any, you know, cooperative against the board game, at the end of your turn, you basically roll, in this case, roll some dice to determine where the next little fire begins.
I'm laughing because basically, yeah, with a lot of cooperative games, at the end of your turn, then bad stuff happens.
Right, exactly. And so what you're essentially doing is you're kind of racing to identify which of these tokens, which have question marks on them,
yeah.
because they're all hidden, are actually people, and you have to get a certain number of people out of the house.
Yeah.
So you wanna and...
identify them, find them, and if they're people, carry them back out again.
Right. And at the end of your turn, you roll some dice, and the board essentially has a grid on it. And so you use the dice and that grid to determine where the next fire is sort of starting. And fires can create explosions, which will blow out walls, and if enough walls get blown out, then the building collapses and you lose.
Mm-hmm. Guess what's happened most of the times that we've played Flashpoint Fire Rescue?
Last time we played, we were literally one roll away from winning and we lost.
Yeah.
Boo.
So that's our top six. As we were putting this together, we started discussing a little bit with each other if more RPG type games might fit into this idea
right.
of cooperative games to play with kids.
Yeah, and specifically a game like Mice and Mystics. A lot of people have talked about Mice and Mystics. I mean, it's a cooperative game because you don't really need to have a person playing the DM role, right? With a game like Hero Kids,
sure.
which is fantastic and wonderful and a great RPG for children, you still have to have a dungeon master kind of person who is orchestrating everything, some kind of an adjudicator to do stuff. With Mice and Mystics, the mechanisms are built into the game so that you don't really have to do that. And so you can actually play a cooperative game and everybody plays their own character in the game. And so it's a lot of fun. I think for us, for some reason, and I don't know if I'm prepared to blame the game for it, but for some reason, there's enough complexity in the mechanics where it feels a little bit slog-like.
Specifically Mice and Mystics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure what that is. But, I mean, the game is so pretty.
and the story is interesting. The theme is neat. Stuff, right? And we've tried a couple of times now, and we want to like it and get into it. And then every time that we put it down, it just gets shoved to the back of the pile again. We don't want to play it again for a while.
I wonder because there are enough sort of complex mechanics in that game, especially if you're playing it with kids,
mm-hmm.
that it might be that we're doing it a disservice with the infrequency with which we play it.
I'm sure we are. So. But I'm also kind of feeling like maybe at this point there's just games that don't have the same complexity of mechanics that might be a better use of our time.
I don't know. I think I have mixed feelings about it. Because for a number of reasons. Number one, we've got all of the expansions, so we're financially committed to it. And number two, I think especially as our kids get a touch older, right? Maybe
sure.
if the youngest kid playing was 9 instead of the oldest kid playing being 9, it would be a lot of fun. I mean, they played Mice and Mystics on tabletop with Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
So it's certainly a game that is very accessible and easy to watch and sort of figure out what's going on. And I do feel like as we've played it with the kids being a little bit older, we've struggled a little bit less.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm more inclined to say that it might be a function of age.
Sure.
But if you are into that kind of thing, absolutely check out Mice and Mystics.
It's also worth mentioning Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. We can't say too much about this definitively because we own it, but we have not cracked it open to play it yet.
Yeah, so the reason why we haven't played this yet is because I'm reading the books to our 9-year-old.
Right.
And so I don't want to ruin... First of all, I'm experiencing them for the first time reading them to our 9-year-old.
And they're magical and wonderful.
They're fine.
Mostly.
They're fine books. And so I don't want to ruin it for me or for her, which is why we haven't played it. But it is a sure. cooperative deck builder. Now,
yeah.
I have talked to a number of people who have played it, and they've felt like it was fine.
Hmm.
Generally speaking, with the people that I have spoken to, the ones that are more in love with the theme of Harry Potter like the game more than the ones who generally judge games on their mechanics.
I see.
Okay.
Which
kind of goes back almost a little bit to what we said about like the Bob Ross games and
yes.
whether or not they tied closely to the theme and how I think Happy Little Accidents is more fun than The Art of Chill, even though
yeah.
The Art of Chill is way more thematically Bob Ross. So there is something to be said there about that level of experience with the people that I've talked to who play this game. That being said, it is a widely acclaimed game. If you are steeped in Harry Potter lore and you love the Harry Potter universe, Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle is a cooperative deck builder that it might be worth it for you to check out. There's an expansion, too.
Cool. Yeah, something about monsters and...
And elevators. I'm just kidding.
No, the scary kind of monsters. I think that's going to be it for this week. If you are screaming at your audio player because there is a cooperative game that you love to play with the children in your life that we didn't mention, please let us know.
How, pray tell, my dear wife, would people do that?
Well, you could always email us.
Sure, Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
And Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
But I think probably the best way is on our social media.
Yeah, so we're on Facebook at FamilyGamersAA. We're on Twitter at FamilyGamersAA. We're, you could probably even comment on an Instagram post at FamilyGamersAA. Or you could join our Facebook community. Easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community.
Right. And that will bring you right into our community where we invite you to post all sorts of things. If you have a question about anything family gaming related, you can post in there and somebody will respond.
Yeah.
Any other feedback that you might have for us, we absolutely welcome on any of those channels as well. We love to hear feedback. We love to hear the kinds of things that you're thinking about. If you've got random odd questions that popped up while you're listening to the show, let us know what those are because we'd love to talk about them.
You can always let us know by leaving a comment on the post for the show notes by going to thefamilygamers.com.
Yes, you can.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the Family Gamers podcast on whatever podcast catcher you desire. We are now available on TuneIn Radio. Of course, it would be really helpful if you could leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts.
I have a mission for our listeners.
What is it, pray tell?
A mission, should you choose to accept it, is to tell one person about the Family Gamers podcast this week.
Just one?
Just one.
I mean, you could obviously tell more than one, but your mission is to tell one person. Right. There is one person in your life who needs more podcasts to listen to.
And this is the podcast for them, I hope. The Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by Wild East Games. You can find Wild East Games online at wildeastgames.com or at Wild East Games on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you, Wild East Games.
So that's it for this week. We've got a little bit more gaming to pack in before our kids start school in a couple of days. So until next time, play games with your kids.